Welcome back to the podcast. This is Nathaniel from the Film Experience, and I'm here with Nick Davis.
This is basically a deleted scene. It's an extra.
Yeah, it's a short podcast. And Katie Rich.
Wakanda forever!
And we've all just seen Black Panther.
Along with the entire planet, it sounds like.
Yes.
And even planets in the planet that we didn't know about. They're turning up too.
They've been hiding away with all the most valuable minerals this whole time.
Exactly.
Yeah, vibranium. How many different substances are the strongest metal in the universe? There's unobtainium from Avatar. There's adamantium.
Oh, yeah. And adamantium exists within the same like comic book universe as Wakanda, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah. And now vibranium. Well, vibranium was always there, but it's weird because Marvel referred to adamantium that way, too.
Well, adamantium's out, vibranium's in.
Well, Wolverine's dead, so...
Spoiler.
Yeah. Logan spoiler from last spring.
Mm-hmm.
God, this has been an emotional ride already.
So, did you guys see this in a normal movie theater with a normal crowd, or at a critic's situation?
Normal. Always normal.
Here in Durham, North Carolina, the critic screenings are always filled out with other people because there just aren't that many movie press around. So it was, you know, me and my little row, but even I was in the press seat and the guy sitting next to me, who I must say was reading a Black Panther novel and wearing a Black Panther shirt. His friend had won a radio contest for tickets. So it was definitely like a more normal than not crowd.
Yeah. I went to the all media here. And as you guys know, that's not the same as going to a critic screening. You get a lot of people who feel more like mainstream movie audiences.
And I think at all media, sometimes you also get like radio contest winners, right?
Yeah. So it was definitely a mix. Like people were, and the thing that's interesting about movies like this, that even before they open, they become a cause for people, is that you can feel that in the way people react even during opening credits. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Because like, I remember growing up, like, you'd go see every 3 years or whatever the new Star Wars came out, and people would always, like, scream and applaud when the credits started. But usually it takes some sort of familiarity. And I know we have that already from the Marvel Universe, but it still stuck out as, like, this is a little bit the way I felt watching Wonder Woman with crowds, that people were just so relieved that it was on screen that they were just going to wildly applaud everything before it had even really proved itself.
I've seen multiple tweet accounts that people applaud when Ava DuVernay shows up to introduce the Wrinkle in Time trailer that plays before Black Panther.
Yeah.
Like, that's the level of group support happening at Black Panther.
Yeah.
But also, I freaked out just as much when Lupita's name came up at Queen of Katwe. Like, you know, it doesn't honestly matter.
And then you were escorted out of the theater.
No, I stayed in my damn seat.
You guys, I was so pleased to see Lupita get a romantic lead, you know?
Oh, my
because
God.
Because she should have had that immediately after becoming famous.
Not just a romantic lead, but, like, a super spy and, like, you know, domination of an action sequence. And, yeah, I had really missed seeing her actual face and not, you know, Maz Kanata on screen.
Right. And because it just seemed like such a no-brainer when she became famous that here's a romantic lead for movies. Because she's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And a great actress. So it's like, it was nice to see that.
And that she's like, let me just speak Korean for a second. I've got that Streep Cotillard going on. It's cool. Hey, everybody.
I learned a fun fact when one of my colleagues did a profile of Winston Duke, who plays Jabari, you know, the lead of the mountainous gorilla-inspired tribe, that he and Lupita know each other from Yale Drama School, and they met in this group for black actors at the school that was founded by Angela Bassett.
Wow.
So it's a big homecoming on the set of Black Panther.
So for Yale like graduates.
Cool. Yeah.
It was like a real Wakanda kind of concentration, because I know, like, Lupita also did her workshop at Yale and of Eclipsed by Danai Gurira.
Exactly, yeah. And that Letitia Wright, who plays Shuri, was in, I believe, the London production of Eclipsed before Lupita was in it in New York.
And then Martin Freeman politely clapped for the play from the back.
I mean, I do think all these connections say probably as much about the limited opportunity for black actors as it does, you know, the fadedness of the cast of Black Panther. But it does, it is just like a nice cohesiveness to the cast that I feel like you can see on screen. Like, these people are all enjoying being on screen together and enjoying these roles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I loved the movie. You guys too?
Yeah. I had a great time.
I liked it a lot. Love might be a strong word for me, because it felt other than the freshness of, you know, a different cast and a, mm-hmm. you know, and I loved that it was a standalone movie, which is so rare with Marvel. Mm-hmm. That part of it I really loved. But other than that, like, the action scenes or whatever just felt, you know, very traditional Marvel movie to me.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But... like, I was really, like, the first action scene actually really worried me. But the action got better after that.
The fight scene on the waterfall, you mean?
No, the...
the nighttime raid?
Yeah, because mm-hmm. it just seemed like...
Oh, yes, yeah.
I saw a couple cartoonish rubbery bodies flying around, and then I couldn't really tell what was happening. And I'm like, this is a problem in a lot of action movies, that I was hoping this would, you know, leapfrog that problem, because I thought... like Creed, for example, by Ryan Coogler, I thought that really showed that he understand fight scenes.
Yeah. I was surprised how the hand-to-hand combat was not remotely as effective as Creed. I mean, he had a different cinematographer who's Rachel Morrison, an Oscar nominee, and it's a different context, obviously. But I thought the large scale action, like the car chase that Lupita is in, and then kind of when you get to a big battle near the end, I was surprised mm-hmm. by how effective those were. And especially compared to Marvel movies where you see an alien ship hovering over a city and people screaming, and that's like the template that they follow in every single movie. And I was really excited by how that went. And that one felt more like Lord of the Rings, which was really fun.
Yeah, I did think one thing I did love about the action scenes in here is that they had a lot of beats that, not just, you know, things that you could make memes out of, but but that you know, just little curveballs and unexpected touches. Like, I mean, it's already famous, but the wig throw is like sublime. Yeah. You
yes.
know?
Mm-hmm.
And there's, I don't want to spoil the thing from the later, but there's a really, really funny and touching and just, what? moment in the big battle.
With Danai?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the moment my audience exploded for, like, the biggest reaction of the whole night came in that scene.
Yeah, I mean, that moment was just beyond. So I was really pleased with that, but you know, the typical problems I have with superhero movies weren't alleviated, so I felt like I couldn't say this is the best movie ever made, which I feel like is what people want people to say about this one.
Sure. And I think Wonder Woman was in some ways the same thing, where there's a lot of fresh stuff going on in Wonder Woman, and then you get to the end and there's a big fight scene on an airstrip with a big fire monster, and you're like, hang on, we've done this. and Black Panther, I think, avoided that more successfully.
Yeah. And I will say the best thing about it is that, for me, is that it really honors, like, its whole cast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's this great feeling that ties into the theme, which this is my favorite thing about the movie, at least, is that the sense of community is not just the theme, but it's also the form, kind of.
Yeah.
Because, you know, usually superhero movies that have the title character in them, that's the whole movie. And what I love about that character is how much he defers to his team and the women, which was great.
And that was, also
that was very fresh.
And in a way, that sense of ensemble extends to the villain in a way that, mm-hmm. like, you know, he's got a point of view that's not impossible to understand, even if he's carrying it pretty far, you know, and increasingly. But, like, it was definitely a kind of conversation and tension that you felt the whole audience relating to, and that Michael Jordan is actually allowed to play as something that somebody might think, instead of just like, I want to bomb the planet.
Right. Yeah. Well, and you know that when you cast Michael B. Jordan as your villain, you're going to get empathy and, like, this woundedness. And he has, like, some of the most powerful emotional beats in the movie, which I was surprised by, but shouldn't have been, because he's great.
You know, you guys, totally. I'm so pleased at his career, because when I first saw him on Friday Night Lights, I was like, this kid is a fucking amazing actor. And I'm just, but a lot of times when you see, like, a teen actor or a really young actor do really great work in something where they're not like one of the leads, you have no idea if they're ever going to get another opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm just so pleased because he made me cry on Friday Night Lights and, you know, supporting character role in a TV series. And I'm just so happy that now he's a big star.
He was also, he was on The Wire when he was even younger, like maybe like 14 or so, and was amazing on that too. I thought, kind of thought we were just going to talk about the women.
He's definitely their best villain.
Marvel's best villain?
He's definitely their, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's really good. And also I think Andy Serkis, like, even though he's kind of the tangential villain in this, like left over and connecting it to the rest of the Marvel movies, I thought, I really liked what he was doing in this.
Yeah.
And then he kind of steps out of the way exactly when he needs to.
Yeah. And that, and another part of the movie that was sort of surprising, in a fresh way.
Can we also talk about Ruth Carter?
Oh my God.
Yeah. Oh, she's my been
doing,
God.
She's been doing great work for years. And it like the explosion of color in this movie was very thrilling in terms of costumes.
Do you have a favorite look,
and
Nick?
Not like, no.
It's so hard.
They were all, I don't know, do you?
I feel like, and now I can't even like figure out what it, there's something that Lupita wears. Like there's like the armor that she gets into near the end of the movie that really blew my mind. But then also like, you know, what they wear to that casino scene is incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which I hoped Rian Johnson was watching that casino scene and being like, oh yeah, okay. I take that note. I take that note. Even like the costumes that could have just been like background color in the initiation ceremonies all had so much detail in them, and you kept wanting to look more at all of them, even though you knew that most of them weren't going to be in anything except long shot for most of it. But it was just amazing.
All the blankets worn by Daniel Kaluuya's people that like all have texture to them and variety, and then they have secret powers that you learn later in the movie.
Well, I mean, and that's true not just in the costume design, but in, like, the production design, too, like, that there's more, I mean, there is, in some ways, there's a little bit, like, sort of theme parkness to it, which is true in a lot of, like, blockbusters with sets and stuff where it feels like you don't quite buy into the reality. It feels like a purposeful fantasy. But I appreciated that there was like so much variety even within that. Like I loved when we went to the gorilla tribe. I forget the guy's name.
M'Baku.
M'Baku, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So his lair, you know, was so different than the rest of it, but still felt like fully imagined.
That guy, especially that actor Winston Duke I mentioned, is like, I spent the whole time being like, oh, I must know him from something. Because like it took me a while to recognize Sterling K. Brown, and I kind of figured like all of them were like moderately famous. But he's really like barely been in anything before, and he stood out so much.
Oh, that's true?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, between, and Daniel Kaluuya, who obviously we all saw in Get Out, but like I didn't really know what else he could do besides being in Get Out, which is a really reactive performance. And he really stood out for me. Like, there's so much great emerging talent in this alongside, like, Lupita and Angela Bassett and Forest Whitaker. Mm-hmm. I kind of just thought you guys were going to want to talk about only actresses.
Well, I mean, Lupita. We started with Lupita.
Yeah. And Letitia Wright, Dana I think, Gray. Is so great and so, like, funny and energetic in this, like, you know, technical role that could be so like boring just about all the cool tech she gives her brother, but she really stands out as Shuri.
Yeah.
And I love that she punctures sort of the fussiness of the royal family feeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like right when it starts, you're like, oh, this is, you know, this very stiff, like presentational stuff. And then she makes it feel informal, like she's known them her whole life.
Yeah.
Totally.
So yeah, I loved her too.
Yeah, it does feel like what he already was so good at in Creed, of just making sure that every character is bringing their own coloring to the film.
Mm-hmm.
And like the Tessa Thompson character, who could have been so functional, I think none of us felt that way about her. And that same gift, even with a bigger ensemble here, just keeps happening. Like, he's really good at, and I didn't honestly feel it that much in Fruitvale.
Right.
But in this one and the last one, it just feels like his ability to connect with an actor's personality, but also push that personality a little bit and still suggest a complete person, even with people who aren't on screen that much, is pretty impressive.
Yeah. I mean, agreed. My fear, that's one of my favorite things in directors who have that talent, because I love ensemble movies. So my fear is always that they don't hamper that gift, which is what I felt happened to Paul Thomas Anderson. Where they start out, because it seems to happen a lot, where they start out doing more ensemble pictures and then become more focused on single characters. Because I hope that he continues to explore that, because I agree it's a really cool thing about his directorial style, that you really feel everyone involved instead of just who the focus is. Like, for example, we talked about this with Damien Chazelle, like, the supporting characters are just basically props in his movies, even if you like the movies.
Yeah.
Right.
I need to get moving soonish. So.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Well, we all agree about everything.
So Wakanda forever.
Wakanda forever. Ruth Carter forever. Put Lupita in a spy
quick
movie.
Quick question, though. Obviously, because Black Panther will return in Avengers Infinity War. Obviously, that's already shot, so they can't cater it to people loving Black Panther so much. But what do you... How do you guys think... How would it even be possible to follow this up?
Like with Black Panther 2?
Yeah.
I think you do more like maybe like James Bondy international spy sequences, which I think was such a highlight of this movie. Maybe like less inter Wakanda drama and more like having them venture out into the world.
Yeah.
Time will tell. They pay other people to think about this. I don't know.
All right. It was great to talk to you guys again. Go see Black Panther, and well, you've already seen it, so tell us what you thought in the comments.
Bye
guys, this is fun.
Hey, it's your host Nathaniel again. Since we called that a deleted scene, it wasn't really, but it was very short. Here is an actual deleted scene from December. Nick Davis, Teo Bugby, and myself discussing movies that didn't really factor into award season, but we hope people will remember when they think back on 2017. Figure it's the last chance to share this, since the Oscars will be wrapping up this film year very, very soon. Here you go. Okay, so we're running out of time rapidly, but I want to, now that we're deep into award season, I want to hear from each of you on a movie that, I mean, let's not even talk about awards so much as, like, what do you wish were being discussed simply because, you know, people should see it and it has a lot of wonderful aspects to it. Do you have one, Teo?
Yeah. One movie that I feel this way about, which might be my favorite movie of this year, is Félicité. And so when the Oscar long list or short list just came out for the best foreign films, I know that everyone was really upset about BPM, but I was just sitting there like, don't care. So happy for Félicité, which is so, so wonderful. And so, probably the film that like most surprised me within itself, where it's like constantly redefining its own terms as you're watching it and like deepening its own ideas and like surprising you with how much it has let every thought ruminate, such that like by the time you get to the end of the movie, it's like just deeply moving. And to me, like one of the most like full intellectual and emotional experiences I've had at the movies this year. So I'm very excited to get to see that get some mainstream attention.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen that yet, but now I'm like desperate to.
It's really wonderful.
About it.
So great.
And but anything
also,
else?
Killer lead actress performance, Nathaniel.
Oh, okay. Any other movie besides that one, too?
My cause this year has been Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman.
Oh, I love that one too.
I loved that movie. I love that movie. I think it was so, it's like a really odd duck. Like, it's not the kind of movie that could ever either get awards attention, but almost it, like that it was a massive flop makes absolute sense to me, because who has seen that movie besides me?
I have.
Yeah, right. Besides us. We are the three-person audience for Professor Marston. But I think that had sort of, like, the combination between hyper-traditionalist storytelling, but then at the same time, a really weird idea of what's traditional, was very appealing to me. And another movie that I just felt completely taken aback by, mm-hmm. And like had like a great, like, simultaneously you're sort of feeling it's a very goofy movie, but then also touching, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, I was surprised at how many things I was allowed to feel at the same time in Professor Marston.
I was just going to say that, like, I think it's a really bracing movie because the topics are in some ways very in your face, especially about human sexuality. But it's not, even though it has scenes of people judging other people about their sexuality, the movie feels very, like, the direction, everything feels very non-judgmental. Like, these are just people's lives. They're complicated. They're messy. And I found it really bracing. I was, like, totally in it from start to finish. And I'm kind of surprised, like, more critics didn't sort of, like, rally for it. But maybe they weren't. Maybe you have to be in the mood for it to hear those things or watch those lives.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. It's also, like, the question of tone, like, while you're watching it, you know, it's like, now we're going to play games with our sexy lie detector. You know, like, that's a mood. Like, you do have to, you have to go into it really, like, looking for the experience that you're going to get.
Yeah.
But you went repeatedly, right?
Yeah, I did. Well, the first time I went was the week of the Weinstein expose. Mm. And I didn't really know much about the movie. I just knew that it was, like, a lesbian director. And so I wanted to see it for that reason. And I went, and it's, the whole movie is, like, it's about consent. It's about thinking about your sexuality. It's about, like, thinking about how to expand your sexuality, but, like, actually serve every person in, you know, whatever dynamic that you're having. And it was such a, and then it's, yeah, that it's also so buoyant and so light and so silly, in a period when I was not feeling buoyant and light and silly, was very pleasant. And so, and also Rebecca Hall looks exactly like my therapist. So I had to keep going back to remind myself.
Doesn't that mean your therapist looks a lot like Christine? That could be difficult.
Why did you take it there, Nick?
Sorry.
And can we just say Rebecca Hall is so freaking sexy in that movie?
Very hot. Yeah.
Because And because the sexiness is totally coming from her intellect.
Yeah.
Like, the really camera isn't objectifying her or anything, but she's just so, I was just so into her in that movie.
She's got a great gaze.
Yeah. Okay, Nick, what do you think? A movie you wish people would see that was being talked about?
I just saw this documentary called The Work that I don't exactly understand when it opened theatrically. I think it was kind of middle of fall. And I really wish it were still on the documentary semifinalist list, and kind of can't account for it not being there. It's about a group therapy session that happens once a year at Folsom State Prison in California, maximum security. And people in the, you know, non-inmates can enroll to come do this long weekend of group therapy with inmates, which is facilitated for 3 days by this really interesting organization. And there are clearly people in the prison who've been there for 26 years, 42 years, who this is the weekend they look forward to every year. And you get just enough information about why three of the men in particular, they're all men, have decided to show up and try to take this class, mm-hmm. basically. The inmates are leading them through while also fully participating in. And it was just incredible. And probably helps in this case that I think it was directed by the son of the person who founded the organization. Which mostly means that nobody's thinking too much about him being in the room. Like, given the things that get talked about and the emotional extremes that people wind up at, but not just extremes of anger and rage, also extremes of empathy and sort of risk-taking, the way they take care of each other, it wouldn't have happened as a movie if anybody was conscious of that filmmaking team who's here this year. Mm-hmm. It's amazing, and it's on... I think I watched it on Amazon.
Okay.
It's called The Work. It's called The Work, yeah. Every single person's story was stunning to me.
Mm-hmm. And, not trivialized, it sounds like a very beautiful experience, but I do just love sitting in on other people's therapy. One of the best things
well,
stunning.
You are in for it. The Rebecca Hall is not in it, but but and even like the people who you think are probably maybe being set up as, oh, this is the person that won't pop off until the end of it, probably. It's going to take a long time to get to him. Like, I was wrong about most of that stuff. And then one I just saw last night that I really loved and was also thinking about during our ensemble conversation was called Love Song with Riley Keough and Jenna Malone. Did you like that?
I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't heard of this one.
It's a Sundance film, right? It was, like, played
at Sundance. Like, Sundance 2016. And then... kind of made its way to theaters in February of this year, I think. Mm-hmm. We keep hearing this is a good year for LGBT cinema, and A Fantastic Woman comes up, and Call Me By Your Name, and Beach Rats, but this is a really touching love story between women who are not quite 100% connecting because they don't need the same things from each other at the same times as each other. And then the two major time frames of the movie, which are 3 years apart, they're enmeshed in different circumstances of other people to make it hard. But it's an interesting movie about marriage and women talking about why women would even consider getting married. And Rosanna Arquette shows up and has like two scenes as this awful, wealthy mother who clearly hasn't been in touch with her daughter in a long time for the wedding. And in two scenes, she kind of Deborah Wingers it. Rachel getting married style, you're like, well, there's a complete person. And even though she's being set up as the person you can easily hate, she makes two really interesting points that probably everybody needed to hear. Really quiet, but I got to know those characters so well in 82 minutes. So that's streaming as well.
Okay. Another one to check out. I'm going to say of something that I wish more people had seen, kind of a different tack here, The Wedding Plan from Israel. It's a romantic comedy about a woman whose husband leaves her right before the wedding. And it's like she's Orthodox and very religious. So she decides that God will provide and she will just keep all the wedding plans. So she starts like frantically dating, trying to find somebody to marry. And it sounds very silly, but it felt like such a fresh take on a romantic comedy with all the tropes that come with romantic comedies, like bad dates and these idiosyncratic, like, oh, this is how you fall in love with someone. And I just thought it was really fun and a really fresh perspective. It's by Rama Burstein, who...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Her first film, Fill the Void, is also about a wedding and is also very, very wonderful.
Yeah.
And yeah, very not a romantic comedy. Like, very.
Yeah. Romantic, maybe. Not a comedy.
Yeah, but she just seems to have a perspective that other filmmakers don't. Like, it just felt very different. And there was a lot of respect for people's faith that I was not expecting and not used to seeing in movies. And that I usually actually kind of revolt against because I grew up in such a religious environment, and I have moved away from that purposefully. But I thought it was, I was really into it. And like all good romantic comedies, it's both funny and like you actually root for the way things turn out. So the happy ending is very, it's very well set up, I think. I liked that movie a lot, but I never hear anyone talk about it. So that's my off the radar. Because my other ones, I feel like they have their pockets of people who've, you know, really gone to bat for them. Like, I liked The Ornithologist a lot. I don't know if you guys saw that.
I liked that a lot.
Yeah, I liked it too.
Yeah, God's Own Country, but a lot of people have talked about that. We got to wrap up. Thank you, Teo Bugby.
Thanks so much, Nathaniel, for having me.
And Nick Davis.
Yay, this was so fun.